Hey, what's up? This is Playmakers episode -1. This is a preview special edition episode where I'm giving you, the folks who have really supported me all along in this, being on the mailing list before the show even launched. So cool. I'm so grateful for you. So this is my way of thanking you. It's a snippet from an interview with Lauren Lanning. Now, you surely know Lauren as the legendary creator of the Oddworld franchise. We're going to talk a lot more about him in the complete episode, but Lauren is an incredibly fascinating person who's also had an amazing and, I think, pretty singular career in the game industry. He was generous. We sat down for a very long chat. I think it's actually the longest interview I've recorded. This is just a section from that interview, but I know you're going to enjoy it, and the whole thing will be coming to you in less than 2 weeks. Check it out, and if you think there's someone else you know who might enjoy this, feel free to forward it to them. Thanks for being a part of the launch of Playmakers. I really, really appreciate it, and I hope you're going to get a lot out of this show. If there's anything you want to tell me about this snippet or about what you'd like to see on the show in the future, just shoot me an email, jordan@brightblack.co. All right, here's Lauren.
I think you need visibility. Mm-hmm. So I was having a talk just recently with someone who's been very successful multiple times with the Kickstarter stuff. And he said, look, you have well-known designer, proven, well-known IP, you got the winning chemistry for Kickstarter. Outside of that, you have the most successful ever on Kickstarter, which is Exploding Kittens, that Alan Lee was not necessarily a household name for game designers, no. Right? I mean, I was a fan of his. I know the things he did. I think he's brilliant. But he wasn't necessarily like, oh, Alan Lee is doing Kickstarter, not drawing millions of people, right? But the cartoonist that he had associated with did have a million Facebook followers. So there was a cartoonist who did the Exploding Kitten stuff. And because of that, mixed with Alan Lee's brilliant approach to ARG campaigning, boom, they get over 10 million on a Kickstarter. So, yeah, so if you had something like, I guess we could say that was a celebrity cartoonist being used for off-case example, you know, an out-of-spectrum example, deck playing cards for, you know, a Magic-like game, right, card game. That was way out of the box, but you had the science. So you had a guy who knew how to implement the science possibly better than anyone else in the world. Alan Lee or Jordan Weissman would be in the same class, right? They worked together. You, I'm sure you know their history together. And then you had a heavily followed cartoonist who – together, the cartoonist was able to draw the eyeballs to the campaign, because if you were following him, he was able to post on his Facebook, hey, I'm doing this thing if you want to get involved. And everyone was like, ah, I love your shit, you know.
Right.
That
right.
Draws it over. And then really how they executed on it, making every tier an unlockable. Like, they did a number of things. I talked to Alan after that success, and I asked him, like, hey, man, can you tell me what you did? You know, and I did the same with Chris Roberts. I did the same with Brian Fargo and Tim Schafer, like, you know, I'm out there trying to learn, right? There's a case where I guess you had a celebrity. That's the most successful Kickstarter of all time. And the celebrity came not from the area you were trying to sell, although it would include the art in the package. And they raised over $10 million. So the combination of celebrity and science, I think, enabled that to happen. But really because of the social following, not because of pop so much. You know, it wasn't like a Kim Kardashian celebrity type, right? Which I'm sure if she did a Kickstarter, you know, it would just be the most enormous ever for the latest, you know, hair curl, I don't know, whatever it would be.
Exploding Kittens could also work, actually.
There you go. You know, Hollywood explodes kittens, yeah. I think it's a really tough sell, and I think it's gotten harder because of the failures. And I think the failures can be attributed to, you had a way for people to basically get money on a hope. I think they were always going for less money than they needed, which is a really dangerous thing. You know, like we'd say, well, you know, if we're going to make a new game, we need $5 million. Well, who's going to do a Kickstarter and ask for $5 million? You're not going to get it. But ask for $500,000 and maybe you'll get $5 million. It's like, this is crazy.
They always say to ask for a really small amount because people don't want to be part of a Kickstarter that fails. People only want to participate in Kickstarter once they already see it's going to succeed.
So it's a weird effect, right? You can't, and they're all going, oh, I want to back guys that are honest. And it's like, eh, kind of you do. But really, you need to be led to it. You know, who are we kidding? Yeah. So I think all that's a bit of a really tricky navigation for the person doing the Kickstarter, the group doing the Kickstarter. But you have to have some avenue of support that's going to bring the eyeballs, because it's certainly not just going to come because everyone's scouring every Kickstarter that's available and finds yours interesting. You have to be highlighted. You know this better than anyone with your experience in free-to-play games, mobile games, things of that, right? You got to, if you're going to have an app that's going to go anywhere on an iPhone or Android, you have to be featured by the Apple Store, or you have to have some enormous outlet of visibility somewhere else that you're drawing them to the Apple Store.
But without the acquisition side handled, you're in deep water.
Exactly. And you know, and I'm sure you actually understand that science much better than I do, because you've had a lot more experience and successes in those areas where basically, you know, you're dealing with like free product where you have to have 100 million people playing so you can monetize, you know, less than
a tiny fraction. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which is, you know, a very different philosophy that I've been executing on. Just, you know, I'm still a little bit stuck in the old world, quite frankly, in terms of the type of content, the story games, premium price product. So different categories. My admittance there is that I don't understand the sciences of free to play as well as people who execute on them. You know,
one way to think about it, though, is that it is really the same thing. Let's say you're marketing a giant blockbuster film. You have all that marketing content. That's your free content. Mm-hmm. All those trailers that you're showing people, all those ads, everything you're doing to motivate people to make that final move of going to see the movie, mm-hmm. that's the monetization step. But you've mm-hmm. given them all this free content, interviews mm-hmm. on TV shows, commercials, the billboards, all that stuff is generating. It's just sort of one way to kind of conceptualize it.
To that point, let's say when designers have asked me or small teams that want to do Kickstarters and they say, or even get publishing deals, they're going, well, you know, our game and we believe in it and it's an idea right now. We might have a little bit of a prototype, but this is how we want to do it. This is what we want to make happen. And what I'll say is, well, what is really special about it, right? And so let's say it's animation. Maybe let's say that's really where your guys' skill set comes from. You do something extraordinary with animation. And in some degrees, I'd put like Ori in the Blind Forest. It's like an animation art spectacle of, you know, it's just a wonderful, really Absolutely. Wonderful. That's where the strength was, I'd say. So if it's that, then where can you make, before you start a crowdfunding, where can you make some small examples, little tiny as possible examples? Let's think, you know, YouTube like attention span. And maybe it's animation that your excellence in is pretty unique. And if we could see it in a game, maybe you stimulate people. And I think right away to the first imagery I saw of Cuphead, right?
I don't know Cuphead.
It's the Schlesinger type animation from like the, you know, early 20th century.
Oh, like Popeye style.
Yeah, so it's like original Popeye style. And as soon as you saw it, you're like, holy shit, this is like 1920s animation in a video game. It perfectly works. Like, oh my God, they could create a whole genre out of this if they wanted to run with it, and they should. I don't think it's released yet. And they've been working on it for a while. But it's just really cool, right? The second you see that, you could get animation fans all over the world interested in your game.
When I first saw the little Flash version of Limbo, you know, it was
Perfect
like five
example.
Years before it came out. I was waiting. I was just waiting with my money.
And what's the new one now? Inside?
I think it's called? Inside. Yeah. Yeah.
And people are just loving it, right? Voting it, you know, best game on Xbox, stuff like this. But the point being is, let's say that little clip that you saw of Limbo got you interested. And if it said, follow us here, we'll be doing a Kickstarter soon, we'll tell you when it is, you know, maybe you'd say, sign me up. I want to know more about this, right? There's some...
No Man's Sky did the same thing.
No Man's Sky, yeah. Let's take Cuphead as an example, because 5 seconds of footage could tell you the promise of the game, because right. you get it when you see it, right? And it's something extraordinary and extraordinarily different, even though we're familiar with everything it's doing, but we just haven't seen that combination of it done in the game before. So when we see that, that could have let's say that's a little clip, and you're trying to make Cuphead. So let's use Cuphead as the game you want to make as an example, right? It hasn't been done yet, and you're a group. And what I'm telling them is I say, create your 5-second test, your 15-second test, something that shows you different and you're special. And then don't put it on Kickstarter. Go into the animation communities that are already sharing this stuff. Go into animator.com, you know, the Animation Collective. Go into these different places and say, hey, guys, we saw this. We're working on this thing. We hope to get this started as a real project next year. Please follow us. Please like us. And if it's cool, the animators are going to support you. Mm. If it's cool, mm. right? If it's subpar, you're not going to get – your friends might support you, but strangers aren't going to. But if it's cool and quality, you're going to start getting some traction.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that piece of my lengthy interview with Lauren Landing, which will be available to you soon. Coming up just this coming week, we have episodes 0, 1, 2, and 3. So that's episode 0, where I kind of introduce the concept of the show, is the first thing that is available. And then episodes 1, 2, and 3 are the first three guests. Really excited. Jason De La Roca, Mike Mica, Lev Chapelsky. Amazing topics that we cover. Venture capital, rapid prototyping, and working with Hollywood are the subjects of those three interviews. And then Lauren is right after that. So again, if you think there's someone who might be interested in the show, just go ahead and please forward this email to them. And if you have any feedback for me, just shoot me an email, jordan@brightblack.co. I'm very much looking forward to having some more stuff like this to share with you very soon.